Word of mouth.
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 This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. Visitors to Salem, Massachusetts have a surfeit of choices in the Halloween season. They can take a Tales and Tombstones trolley tour, go to the Zombie Prom, Voodoo Ball, or a performance of Dracula's Guest, advertised as a journey into terror. The real terror that coursed through the Massachusetts Bay Colony from 1692 to 93 was not the stuff of a night out with the family. More than 200 people were accused of some form of witchcraft by their neighbors. 19 were hanged. Another was pressed to death. 5 women died in prison. The real lives of those caught up in the hysteria has become the stuff of myth, metaphor, and allegory. Historian Marilyn Roach examines the lives of individuals swept up in the trials through surviving documents, invoices, and sometimes objects. Her new book is called 6 Women of Salem, The Untold Story of the Accused and Their Accusers in the Salem Witch Trials. Marilyn Roach, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you for inviting me.
Marilyn, you chose 6 women, not only the accused, but accusers, and one who went from accused to accuser. Why these 6?
Well, their collective experience seemed to cover the possibilities of what people generally went through. They came from different economic backgrounds, different family dynamics, and as you say, some accused and some were accused, and some did both at different times. Different age groups. One was the richest woman in Salem, and the other was a slave who didn't own even herself.
Mm-hmm. The public lives at that time were lived primarily by men, so I'm wondering what kind of sources you used to find out more about their lives.
Right. Well, the trial questions and answers during the hearing sometimes alludes back to things that had happened earlier in their life and the depositions from neighbors. Some of the individuals had descendants who kept genealogical track of things. There's public records of their husband's doings would give an idea of what the family in general was going through. And occasionally they would be in court records themselves. Bridget Bishop had been accused of witchcraft before, and there had been a lawsuit from Mary English's mother sued a neighbor for calling her a witch and won.
I think when most of us look back or imagine that time in Salem Village or Salem Farm, as it was also called, we have this picture of stern piety, you know, all browns and grays. And you fill out that picture with what was going on socially, politically. You give a portrait of a deeply superstitious and prolifically litigious community.
Yes.
Well, there are records of all sorts of going on in courts for thieving and threats and couples fighting.
Uh-huh.
Everything governed by the courts and gossipy neighbors. How did that role play out in the lives of the citizens of Salem?
The civilization wasn't as stereotyped as it's generally remembered. People did wear brighter colors than black. They liked their comforts as long as it didn't interfere with their spiritual life. They didn't mind having a bottle of wine. There was a broken wine bottle found in the archaeological remains of the Salem Village parsonage. But the records of the Quarterly Quarter, a gold mine of interesting tidbits, you get a picture of people suing each other because they're able to. I mean, it was available to the common people if you could pay a few court fees. So there were a lot of lawsuits about property boundaries being violated. Trespass cases was usually the cows or the pigs getting out rather than a person walking across the field. Contracts that were or were not fulfilled, couples getting into trouble before marriage, people fighting. Bridget Bishop and her second husband were sentenced to stand in the marketplace for publicly fighting. She had hit back is what it was. He hit her.
Well, he was excused from being sort of publicly pilloried because his daughter, I guess, paid a fine. And, and that's part of what I'd love to get to here. Bridget Bishop was, she had rows with her neighbors. She was accused of spooking homes, causing farmers' carts to get stuck in a ditch, you know, blamed for a sow who wouldn't suckle her piglets.
Yeah.
And the term at the time that was used is behagged. What did the accusations in general reveal about being a woman in Salem Village?
Well, a general typical person that might be accused earlier than this was an older woman, possibly a widow, who didn't have a lot of family around to speak up for her and perhaps in financial straits so that she borrowed or asked favors of her neighbors more often than was convenient for them. But in 1692, it wasn't just the typical suspect. I mean, Rebecca Nurse and Bridget and Mary English were all happily married. Well, Bridget had her third husband by then, and he didn't apparently hit her, although it wasn't entirely peaceful. But they weren't abandoned and on their own. It wasn't just poorer women, because Mary English was accused, and she was the richest woman in town. But it took less to seem out of line in European culture and in New England.
We're speaking with Marilyn Roach. Her new book is called Six Women of Salem, which gives us a little bit more intimate portrait of women who were involved in the Salem witch trials, both as accused and accusers. Well, prejudice against women aside, racism played into this. Tituba, referred to as Indian, but probably kidnapped by slave traders in Barbados, so probably of African descent, was an easy target for these two 11-year-old girls, Betty Parris and her cousin Abigail Williams. She was the first accused of witchcraft and to confess. Tell us a little bit about her confession. What led to that?
Well, Tituba was accused of sending her spirit out of her body to invisibly inflict harm on the girls who were feeling some kind of sensations, or said they did. I think they convinced themselves of it for a good part of the time, at the behest of the devil, her supposed master. She tried to say, when she was being questioned by magistrates who believed her to be guilty from the beginning, that she was forced by these other witches to go invisibly in her spirit to do this, that it wasn't voluntary at all. But having said that she was doing anything with these supposed invisible entities, only convinced the law that she was part of it. And she named others. They wanted to know who those other witches were. And since she named them, they started looking for other people.
Well, Marilyn Roach, you use transcripts from what actually went on in the court. Let's have you read a little bit from that transcript about Tituba's confession. At this point, she has already named Sarah Good and Sarah Osborne.
The devil brought his book in his pocket, she said, but Tituba's answers as to when and how she signed it were not clear. I made a mark in the book and made it with red, like blood, she said, but she would not say what the red liquid was. The devil give me a pin tied in a stick to do it with, but he no let me blood with it yet, but intended another time when he come again. Did you see any other mark in the book? Asked the magistrate. Yes, said Tituba, yes, a great many, some marks red, some yellow. He opened his book a great many marks in it. Did he tell you the names of them? They knew she could not read. Yes, of two more, Good and Osborne. And he say they make the marks in that book, and he showed them me. How many marks do you think there was? Nine, said Tituba. Did they write their names? They made marks. Goody Good said she made her mark, but Goody Osborne would not tell me. She was cross with me. So now the magistrates had nine witches to worry about, not just the four mentioned earlier.
That's Marilyn Roach reading from a court transcript from 1692 in which Tituba, the slave of African descent, was questioned and confessed to magistrates that she had signed in the devil's book. So she identified nine witches, which added to the fury. There are a number of theories for why these accusations were made by some 74 people, especially theories focusing on young girls writhing with convulsions and, you know, appearing to be taken over by the witches. What are some of the theories, Marilyn, on what was really going on?
At the time, it appeared to be invisible witches and a conspiracy of witches and the devil. Later, it was assumed that they were all lying from the beginning, although not everyone believed that, and I think some of them convinced themselves. Psychological problems, or the way hysterical reactions are catching among people who identify with each other. I think some of them believed it for part of the time, but it became dangerous, as Mary Warren found out, to say that you had been really mistaken about it, because when she tried to do that, the other afflicted girls accused her of selling out to the devil.
Marilyn, you're an historian. You've been investigating these trials, apparently, since 1973, written several books, including a children's book on the subject.
Yeah.
How do you feel about the terrifying episode of history being commodified or thrown into contemporary Salem's kind of, you know, monster mash of events, you know, surrounding Halloween?
There were tourists in Salem before there was a tourist industry. People would apparently get off the train in 1892 and say they wanted to see where the witches were hanged. So the industry accommodated that.
What does your book then add to our understanding?
Well, I hope they remembered as individuals that this is something that somebody had to go through. It's not just symbolic, although it can be symbolic of many things. It was not an easy time. It was not like a Greek chorus spouting lines either for or against. It was people's lives, and before, they're not just cardboard cutouts. And if they survived afterwards, and if they didn't survive, what about the people around them? What happened there? So I just like them to be remembered for who they were rather than who they've been made out to be sometimes.
Historian and illustrator Marilyn Roach, I thank you for joining us.
Okay.
Marilyn Roach is author of several books on the Salem witch trials, most recently Six Women of Salem, The Untold Story of the Accused and Their Accusers in the Salem Witch Trials. You'll find a link to read more on the book and the trials themselves at wordofmouthradio.org.